And good morning. You've tuned in to 88.5 KRFY, and this is a special edition of the KRFY Morning Show called the Wednesday Morning Show. And I'm Susie Perez, and I have my co-host here.
I'm Chris Bessler. Good morning, Susie.
Good morning, Chris. And we have really a great opportunity, and I'm very pleased to welcome our State Senator Sean Keogh from District 1.
Thank you, Susie and Chris. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here and visit with you this morning.
Here on our bonus edition of the KRFY Morning Show.
Mm-hmm. And we'll probably be doing a few more of these coming up in the next 2 weeks.
And I'd be interested if we get some feedback from listeners if they think a Wednesday is a good date for doing the morning show, if we want to expand out into Wednesdays. So
okay. I think we should hear a little bit of weather because we're all so enjoying this weather. It did rain a little bit last night, as it was really nice to wake up and see that my garden had a little water on it. Currently it's 50 degrees from the National Weather Service. Today we can expect 20% of isolated showers, but otherwise sunny with high of 62. Tonight low 35, partly cloudy. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, bright sunshine, 63 degrees high, and Thursday night, low 37, mostly cloudy. It's pretty much spring weather. So
yeah, nice weather. It's actually quite nice out there right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, and going on around town, yesterday we mentioned that the Ospreys at Memorial Field had laid their first egg, and yesterday, guess what?
What?
We got a second egg.
As they should, but
it's pretty fun to watch the Ospreys. You can watch them on that live webcam at sandpointospreys.com. But they're off to a great start, so hopefully they have a good season. Other stuff going on around town, Susie?
Well, we talked about this yesterday, but the farmers market is opening on Saturday, and I'm very excited about that.
Yeah.
You get to see all your friends. You get to purchase and support our local producers, farmers, and whatever they're bringing to the market. And I did hear there'll be greens, greens. So.
Yeah, good stuff to eat.
Mm-hmm. It starts at 9 o'clock on Saturday morning.
The K&K Derby is still going on. We have the same leaders that we've had since the weekend. There's a 21.1-pound Kamloop that was caught by Derek Blanchard that's leading that division. And in the Mackinac division, Ed Dixon has caught a 23.5-pound Mackinac. So those guys have pretty big fish there, but there's another, 6 days left to fish in. So there's a lot of guys out there going to try to unseat them, I'm sure.
Is there a historical most biggest fish ever?
Yeah. Yeah, the biggest cam that's been caught in our lake is 37 pounds.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
It's huge. Big fish.
Yeah.
That was back in the 50s. So we had the fishery really took off in the late 40s, early 50s. And then it declined for a number of years. And actually, the fish and game have done a management project to restore the fishery, and it seems to be working. The fishermen are saying there's more fish and there's bigger fish.
That's what I'm hearing, too. And the bluebacker.
And yes, that's kind of the linchpin to the whole thing. The kokanee, the food fish for the Kamloop. There is a kokanee division in the K&K Derby as well, and I can't remember how big the fish is. They don't get very big. They only get a few pounds, actually. But the interesting thing about kokanee, they're actually a landlocked salmon. And if you've ever eaten a kokanee, it's
just like salmon.
It's salmon.
It's really good.
It's good stuff. I wanted to mention one more thing. There's the Clark Fork Delta Restoration Project is ongoing. Right now, the folks are basically racing the rising waters in the lake as the lake is refilling now to get some work done. And they're very interested in recruiting volunteers. If anybody out there would like to get involved in that project, it's good work. It's hard work when you volunteer for the day, but it's a really beautiful place to be working, and you're involved in a great project. If you're interested in the Clark Fork Delta Restoration Project, go to clarkforkdelta.org, and you can get information there about volunteering for that project.
Okay. We'll get to a little bit more of our entertainment and events calendar, possibly, right after we meet with our state senator.
Yeah, as usual. There's a lot going on in town.
Mm-hmm.
But we have in the studio with us, Sean Keogh, our Idaho State Senator. Sean, thank you.
Good morning. Thanks again for the special bonus edition. I appreciate this opportunity.
So we had a a big session of legislature. Actually, it was, I believe, the fifth longest ever. And it ran until about a week and a half ago, right?
A couple of weeks, right. Yeah. It ran into the middle, the first week of April and a few days past that. So. Wow.
And so one of the last things they did that we saw reported up here was actually they gave you a award or an honor.
I was recognized, very honored and very humbled. When the legislature goes into session, both the House and the Senate hoist flags on top of the chambers, state flags. And the pro tem, Brent Hill, presented me with the state flag that had flown over the Senate chambers in recognition of becoming, by virtue of this term, the longest serving woman senator in the state's history, and also the longest serving senator now from this area as well.
From District 1.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, well, congratulations on that.
Thank you very much. I'm very honored, and the voters and my family have been the reason for that. I appreciate that.
Well, I hope longevity brings us privileges.
Well,
and actually, it does, in the Senate, doesn't it?
It does in the Senate. Yeah. Seniority does matter. And the longer you're there, the more opportunities you have for leadership positions and more influential you can become. So.
And the committees that you sit on, actually, you chair one of the key committees. I mean, so you're the vice chair.
I'm the vice chair of the Finance Committee.
Yes.
Correct.
And that's the committee that basically controls the purse strings for the state.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, so
that's where all the money is. Cecil Anders once, when I was first elected, Governor Anders told me it was all about the money. And I just shook my head and thought, well, that was an interesting statement. But I've ended up on the budget committee because of all the policies that are of interest to our area. They all rise and fall by whether or not we fund them. And
exactly.
So the budget committee really is, the focus of what we do.
So since you are a long-serving senator, and it goes by seniority, who's ahead of you as chair right now?
Senator Dean Cameron. And Senator Cameron is number one in seniority, and I'm number two in seniority. And so he's currently the chair.
And is Senator Cameron going to be around for a while?
One never knows these things.
That's right.
I imagine over the 20 years that you've served North Idaho, you've seen a lot of changes in procedure and kind of the mood of the state and where we're going. Is that...
You know, I have seen some changes. We were chatting before we went on the air about the great website the legislature has and how technology has evolved. I remember when first elected, we had a phone bank. We still do. We have a phone center where people would call in and we'd get stacks of little yellow slips of paper by the bucket load when there was a hot issue. And I would handwrite notes back to people or call them. Now we get bucket loads of emails in our inbox. And the electronics and the technology have really shrunk the 500 miles between here and Boise. And so that's really, really great, actually, for us, especially now also with the video conferencing and the audio streaming. So people really can stay more involved than when I first was elected. And I think area, the economic downturn has had in-migrations and out-migrations, and communities are changing in a variety of degrees, and that's interesting to watch as well.
To mention that website specifically, it's legislature.idaho.gov, and it's a great resource for citizens because they can go on there and they can see any bills that are currently in process in the legislature. And as you mentioned earlier, Sean, when we were talking off air, there's actually a tracking mechanism there. If you're particularly interested in a bill that's in that's going through the legislature, you can set it up to track it, and you don't have to search through literally hundreds of bills that they're considering.
And that's a great tool. In fact, I use it as well. But it is. It's called My Bill Tracker, and you can sign in and it's secure. It's your list. Nobody else gets to see it. And there were 523 bills that were introduced this legislative session. And when you scroll through that, unless you, it's kind of hard sometimes to figure out what it is that you are looking for or what it is that you might be interested in. But once you figure out what that is, you can add that to your list and you can make a mini list. And it also generates, in fact, I put my bills that I was working on in that list. And it would tell me, especially once the bills got out of the Senate over to the House, it would give me a report every day about what happened to those bills, whether it was referred to a committee, whether the committee had acted upon it. So I really encourage citizens that have the internet connection to do that, because then you can track what matters to you.
Mm-hmm. One of the reasons we invited you and any of our legislators into the KRFY studios is to help give an opportunity to our citizens to be informed. And this website is amazing. As you said, you can track your own personal, your bills that you're interested in, and get emails about what's happening. So I do encourage people to go here and be involved, be informed. So
it's very critical. And we serve in the legislature at the pleasure of the voters, and we know that there's issues that people are interested in or concerned about, and we operate best, I believe, when we hear from people at home.
And that, again, is that's legislature.idaho.gov. So, Senator Keogh, how would you assess this session? Do you think it was a successful a session of the legislature to get some important work done?
I believe it was, in overall, I think that it was a very positive session for the state and for our area as well. We had, with the rebound in the economy that is occurring across the state, we still have areas like ours that haven't fully recovered and aren't up to pre-great recession levels. But overall, the state's economy is rebounding. That's provided us more money to work with, more tax dollars are generated. And we were able to put over $100 million more dollars into public schools, K-12 education. It's brought that investment is a 7.4% increase in funding and has brought us up above the level of 2009 when we kind of went in the tank. And what was encouraging about that was, although there are a few legislators that don't believe any more money needs to go into public schools, the overall discussion was not whether or not more money should go in, but how much of an increase. And that's a very positive climate change around the discussion of education funding that I found very positive. We focused on understanding that there's a need and that property taxpayers at the local level are being asked more and more to pick up that need because the state hasn't been. And so we argued about what the level of increase would be. At the same time, we did some other significant education policy changes. I'm not sure how much you want to get into that, but in brief, we instituted a new teacher pay system that's called a career ladder that hopefully will boost beginning level teacher salaries and provide some increases over time for all of our teachers. We also have done some innovative policy work in regards to how our students move through high school, moving from seat time to mastery of subject, which is really exciting for me. And more encouragement and funding for dual enrollment, where students that want to spend their last 2 years of high school can dual enroll in college and graduate from high school and obtain an associate's degree or professional technical certificate at the same time. And all of those things are really exciting to me. We also made some improvements on issues in other areas. We were able to secure funding for a crisis center for a mental health crisis here in northern Idaho. And just yesterday was announced will be located in Coeur d'Alene.
Mm-hmm.
That's tremendously exciting. It's so very helpful.
They did fund a center in another part of the state last year, didn't they?
Excuse me. Yes, we funded one center. The Health and Welfare Department had asked for three. And it went to Idaho Falls.
Okay.
And we got edged out in the Coeur d'Alene area.
So it's significant. We got the second one. And
yes.
Health and Welfare may be back next year to try to get that third one.
Right. And what was also important was we had support from the rest of the state. And the way the budget language was crafted for that, it was to go in either District 2 in the Lewiston area or up in Coeur d'Alene. And the folks in Lewiston and Moscow were able to secure funding for them for a recovery center. Plus, they have some other facilities, mental health service facilities, and they endorsed the mental health crisis center coming to Coeur d'Alene as well. So that's really been good.
Mm-hmm. And when we're talking about funding this new center in Coeur d'Alene, what kind of funding are we talking about?
Millions of dollars.
Okay. So it's really going to provide...
The number actually I've seen reported is $1.7 million.
Okay. It's going to provide beds for people in crisis.
Correct. So today, especially for Bonner and Boundary County citizens, what often sadly happens is if someone's in crisis, we don't have facilities to help them. We don't have a facility that's conducive to helping them through their crisis. They may end up in a jail cell. They may end up in a hospital room and confined. And it really doesn't deal with the crisis. And then along with the person having the crisis, the law enforcement, sometimes they'll drive them around all night because they don't have any place to take them. And there again, that just escalates. Or it certainly doesn't de-escalate the crisis, doesn't give that person the help that they need to get through it. It stresses the law enforcement and stresses the community, really. So this is really a tremendous step. Even though it's in Coeur d'Alene, it's still a tremendous boost for us here in the far northern counties.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to circle back on one question on education. Last couple of years, a big topic of discussion has been the Common Core Standards, what we call the Idaho Core Standards. Did that come up in this session of legislature?
That did several times. And there are folks that feel very strongly that Common Core has been a top-down approach out of Washington, D.C. And there were several attempts, actually, to try to repeal the standards that Idaho has set. But those were rebuffed. And I think for many legislators, but not all, there was a better understanding of the fact that the standards that are in place in Idaho were crafted in Idaho and were put through the public process that we do with all of our rules in the education system. And there's support for the standards that we have in place. Now, that being said, we're also in the part, this is, I think I might, in the past I've told folks, this is the third set of standards that I've worked on in my service. And we're at that point in the cycle where we review them again. And you'll see the review process start this year. So mm-hmm. I think those that are still extremely concerned about what they perceive as issues from a top-down approach will see that there's an opportunity yet again to be involved in what those standards might look like going forward. Mm-hmm.
Want to remind our listeners that this is the KRFY Morning Show with Susie and Chris, and today we're speaking with Idaho State Senator Sean Keel.
Right here on 88.5 KRFY.
Mm-hmm. And so other issues, to throw some out here, the transportation was a big topic of discussion, at least we saw it reported up here, and
yes.
The legislature... It wound up with a substantial increase in transportation funding, although it's well below what the identified need is.
That's correct. There's been, over the years I've been there, I've served on the governor's task force on transportation. I think that was in 2009. And at that point, we identified that there was a $500-something million annual backlog for both maintenance and for expansion of the system, excuse me, I think I have a cold. For just the maintenance alone, the backlog is about $260 million a year. And that was 4 or 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we have struggled with that issue. We've gone through several audits. We've gone through three different directors. The latest director has done a significant overhaul of the structure of the department and pushed services and management dollars down to the street level. Ultimately, and this is why that issue was why the session was delayed. Late Friday night at midnight, after midnight, actually, it was 1 o'clock, we passed a bill. And what it was, it's a consensus negotiated bill, and it will raise about $94 million of that 260, and it will go onto the roads. And I can run through how that happens, but at the end of the day, it moves us further in that it provides money. However, it falls short of the need.
And the funding mechanism for that is an increase in the gas tax, I understand.
Increase in car registrations and truck registrations and a gas tax of 7 cents a gallon.
So our registration fees are going to go up a little bit?
Registration fees will go up by $21 for cars and $25 for trucks, semis. $10 if you have a motorcycle. And then we also added fees for electric vehicles and hybrid vehicles.
And an extra fee for them.
Correct.
Because they pay less than the gas tax.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Correct. That's the theory.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Another issue that came up this year was as the... I believe the governor proposed to accept Medicaid expansion funds from the federal government. Now, that was a big topic last year's legislature. What fate did it have this year?
The governor actually said in his State of the State address that he encouraged the legislature to investigate his task force on Medicaid expansion, which he's had two or three now. To take a look at their final recommendation, which was to craft in Idaho a Medicaid expansion program, which in essence would utilize the federal dollars for purchasing of insurance policies for those folks that fall in that gap. They make too much money to qualify for Medicaid, but not enough money to afford health insurance.
To see a benefit from the health exchange.
Correct.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because we all know health coverage is really expensive.
It's extremely, it is. It's extremely expensive. And for many, it's simply unaffordable.
Yes.
Insurance policy is unaffordable, as is care.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly. And so, unfortunately, in my view, nothing happened.
Now, is that likely to come up again next year? I mean, will that money stay, that federal money stay available to Idaho if they decide to accept it?
Each year that the way that it's structured, the percentage goes down. The money's still there, but they were going to cover 100%. And now I think we're down to 90% of what they will cover. So.
So then what happens to those that fall in the gap?
Well, what will happen is two things, and this is why I am advocate for Idaho's approach to the expansion, is those folks will end up in our emergency rooms, and either the hospitals will absorb that cost through their programs that they're compelled to serve people even though they can't pay, and that will increase everybody else's costs. Or those costs will go on the county property tax rolls through the indigent program, or they won't get service at all. And I don't think any of those are very acceptable routes, particularly not getting any help at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it certainly harms the people that fall within the gap. And it's inefficient way to deal with the financial part of it, putting it on the indigent fund or putting it on the hospital to cover those expenses.
Right. And I think most of us understand that preventative is better. You fix the leak so that you don't have to replace the roof, as an example. Mm-hmm. So you want to be identifying health issues up front, heart disease, cancer, any of those things. When caught early, you have a better chance and less expensive chance of working through those issues. And that's really what we should be doing for people and for the resources, the money that we spend.
Mm-hmm. A lot of times I'm hearing that it's children that are the ones that don't receive the services.
They certainly do fall through the gap. Medicaid covers quite a few children, and there's an expanded range of coverage, income on children. But yes.
Okay. We have a lot more to cover. I have a whole bunch more questions. Chris is kind of leading the charge. But I think it's time we could hear a song.
Okay.
And come back.
A musical break.
A musical break.
To give our senator a chance to...
Breathe. Take a sip of coffee.
Remember, breathe, Sean, yes.
And this is Josh Ritter, Idaho, and we'll be right back with the KRFY Wednesday edition of The Morning Show with Chris and Susie and our state senator, Sean Keough. Josh Ritter, Idaho. And that was Josh Ritter, Idaho. Beautiful song this
morning.
It's a
great song. Yeah, Josh Ritter played the festival 4 or 5 years ago. He had a great show there. He's an Idaho boy. He's from Moscow. And we're in the studio with State Senator Sean Keough. We're talking about the legislative session that just ended. And Senator Keough, one of the issues that came up at the legislature this year was taxes. I think probably taxes come up every year.
They do. That's what makes the state go round.
Now, there was an adjustment to the income tax rate, right?
We've done actually several adjustments over the last few years, even within the recession period. But this year we did not. There was proposals for adjusting those rates.
Okay, so I thought we were talking earlier that the upper income levels received a small tax benefit this year.
Not this year. But in previous years, they have. Okay. But what was on the table was an adjustment of the rates, unless I forgot something. But what was on the table and what did come out of the House of Representatives was a proposal that would lower the income tax rates brackets, and coupled that with there was several iterations with either an increase in the grocery tax credit or complete repeal of the sales tax on groceries. And those passed the House and came over to the Senate where we killed the bill by we sent it out of the Transportation Committee because it also had in it a gas tax increase. We sent it out of the Transportation Committee to the floor of the Senate so that the Senate itself could weigh in on it, and the Senate sent it back to committee. A majority of senators from both parties agreed to do that. And so really what was at play there was many in the House felt that any increase in transportation funding, i.e. Gas tax increase, needed to be coupled with income tax relief or grocery tax relief. And they were convinced that that really was the only way in which they could accept a transportation tax increase.
When you're talking about an income tax increase or decrease, who are we talking about? Which segment of,
Well, and the proposal that ultimately came out of the House and over to the Senate actually adjusted the top payers and moved them down, but it came at the expense of the middle brackets, the middle class people, and the lower brackets, lower income people as well, which is totally unacceptable for me. I'm all about paying less taxes, but if we're going to adjust our tax rate schedule, we need to do it across the board so that it's fair to everybody, in my view. I'm also a proponent of taking sales tax off of groceries. We need to do that as well. But the House's proposal tied that together. It was their negotiation with the Senate relative to the gas tax, and it was not acceptable to a majority of the Senate because it didn't deal appropriately in our minds with the income tax rates. There is a desire to take sales tax off of groceries, but we didn't feel that those issues ought to be tied together, and we thought they each ought to be, certainly we can't operate any of those in a vacuum, but that they each needed to be a separate issue. Besides that, our Constitution says that our bills should have one issue in each bill. We think each of those issues ought to be taken on their own and looked at on their own merits, not as part of the package that was sent to us.
Couple other questions about that. Some people have said that lowering the rate for the higher earners and raising it for the low income and middle class income earners was a move towards a flat rate. Have you heard that?
There is, yes, there's that there are proponents. Yes, I've heard that. And there are proponents for a flat tax rate. However, our system is a graduated system, and the more you make, the more you pay. And again, I think that although flat tax has its allure, I suppose, because it's simple, it's open for debate whether or not that's equitable across all incomes.
Mm-hmm. And you also mentioned that the Senate looked at this House proposal and sent it to committee. Will it be looked at through the summer? Because I know you do committee work in the summer.
Right. No, the committee work that we do, it's dead. Uh-huh. The committee work that we do in the summer is issue specific. And this is not an issue that has gotten a study committee.
But it is likely to come back up again next session.
Definitely mm-hmm. will, particularly the grocery tax, I think. Mm-hmm. Well, actually both. There is a desire to lower Idaho's overall tax rate so that we become more competitive with neighboring states relative to attracting people from outside the state to bring their businesses here. Many of the businesses that tend to move here or grow here are smaller businesses, and that income tax rate, individual income tax rate will help grow the economy. And so that will continue. That debate will continue. And you'll hear everything, I think, all the elements of that discussion. You'll also hear the continued desire to take the sales tax off of food. We have systematically, actually, with a goal of total elimination, we've increased the credit over the last several years. And I think this next benchmark actually will be even, the credit will equal the value of the income on the sales tax, if that makes any sense. And so it won't be as much of a hit to the general fund budget when it goes away.
Mm-hmm. When you're looking at budgets, if you take away revenue, I don't know if this is what you just said, but you take away revenue from one place, you have to still find the revenue because you have the expense side of the budget.
That's exactly right.
And that's always going up, too.
That's exactly right. And Idaho has a balanced budget. We don't spend more than we take in. And if nothing else, the recession showed that Idaho manages its money responsibly. And if we don't have the money, we cut. And although we were very fortunate with K-12 this year, and we all agreed that restoration of that budget needed to have the priority. There's many other state agencies that are still operating at recession level levels. And people, when they call me and they can't get service from, fill in the blank, ITD, DEQ, the plumbing bureau, the electric bureau, it's because they're short-staffed. And we haven't restored that funding. And so there is a cause and effect there for Idahoans.
Mm-hmm. Who's next in the queue to be restored to post-recession levels?
I think for us on the budget committee, we try to education's a priority for us. And we're trying to bring those other agencies back up as it looks like we need to, but try to fairly across the board. But we do have some hot spots, engineers, particularly, and nurses in our healthcare side of things. There's some places where if we don't, law enforcement, if we don't plug the holes, we're going to lose the valuable skills that Idahoans depend on mm-hmm. to private sector.
So the House's tax bill died in the Senate, and there's another bill, actually, that was a lot of contention right at the end of the session when the House, by one vote, a House committee killed legislation that would keep Idaho's child support enforcement system in line with the federal laws. And it actually, well, the net effect of that will be that we're going to lose about $16 million in funding for enforcement of child support laws. But now, the Senate approved that unanimously, I think, or with one abstention?
Unanimously, and one person was absent.
But then when it got into this House committee at the very last, actually last minutes, I guess, of the legislature, late night on Friday or something, the committee voted 9-8 to kill that out of concerns that we'd be subject to international law. Can you give us some more background on that?
So Senate Bill 1067, it is an update of existing law that governs a partnership that we have with the feds on child support enforcement. And then the update is for international law so that child support enforcement can occur if the absent parent is living in another country. And it's important, not only is the money that you just mentioned at stake, but perhaps more importantly, people, I don't know that it's understood that Idaho's authority to collect child support and to enforce court orders ends at the state line. So if the absent parent is in another state or in another country, Idaho can't enforce those orders without having the federal partnership. People could hire attorneys in other states, but really this program that's been in place has been pretty seamless for at least 10 years, maybe longer now. And there's really no way that Idaho can rebuild this system. We need the federal partnership. And we're putting at stake 155,000 families across the state. Here in Bonner and Boundary County, over 3,000 are impacted if this is jeopardized in the manner that it is. The due process concerns are in the bill. If you read the bill, you'll see that Idaho would still protect its state sovereignty. It would still have the ability to decline to enforce an order from another country or another state where
they just have to do it on a case-by-case basis.
Correct. Right. But there's a clear process outlined in the bill, that in the new language. In fact, I would argue makes that a little stronger than it is today. And it really is.
And the Idaho Attorney General has looked at the bill, and he said there isn't a problem with enforcing, with maintaining our set of standards here.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Right. It's very clear. Mm-hmm. It's very clear in my mind that due process of individuals within Idaho is protected.
And so this particular issue might yield another session of legislature. Is that correct?
That is correct. In fact, this morning at 9:30 our time, the governor has announced a press conference where he will announce whether he's calling a special session or whether some workaround has been found with the federal folks, although they've been pretty clear that we need to put this in law. But we'll see what the governor has to say here in about an hour.
Yeah. So you could be going back down to Boise.
We certainly could.
Now, I'm just curious, how much does it cost to call the legislature into session for something like this?
So my understanding is that the first day is $36,000, and that each day after that, I think it was $6,000. I know during the session, it costs $30,000 a day to run the legislature, and I think we staff up quite a bit more. But and that's why the discrepancy. But $36,000 for the first day and then $6,000 a day after that.
So one practical effect is $40,000-$50,000 probably is going to have to be spent in order to rectify this, assuming the legislature gets back in session and does take some measure to rectify it.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So only the House needs to come back to work on this, or the whole group?
The whole legislature.
Okay.
Will have to come back, and I would guess that the bill would start in the House this time because that's where it failed, and then come over to the Senate. But both bodies have to pass it, and the governor has to sign it in order for it to become law.
Do you have any insight as to the real reason that this didn't pass in the House? I mean, you mentioned a few things, but...
You know, I think the reporting was very accurate. It was a two-day hearing. I do think it's important that the listening audience understand that, you know, that it wasn't held up as a result of some sort of shenanigans. The process is... you know, we get hundreds of bills that are introduced, and we have some deadlines that we try to stick to. And so that the Senate will run all the Senate bills first, and in the meantime, House bills are coming over, but the House bills will sit until the Senate gets done with what it thinks it's going to get done with, and then it'll start working on the House bills. Well, that's the reverse process in the House. They'll work on House bills, and Senate bills will sit until they get done with whatever they think they're going to do. And they really, the House worked on education and transportation, and a lot of things just kind of sat for a long time. And I think my sense is that Health and Welfare knocked on the chairman's door and said, I know you've really been busy, but I think this bill, we need this bill. And that's why it didn't get out for a hearing until the last week.
It needed more vetting then?
Right. And I apologize. So they had 2 days of hearings. There were a lot of questions that committee members asked. And they didn't feel like they got, those that voted no, didn't feel like they got appropriate responses or good answers. And their concerns weren't asked. They were told they couldn't amend the bill. And that, frankly, made them kind of grumpy. And we're all humans, and we're tired. And none of that is excuses at all, because I'm just appalled at what happened. But they dug in. And then by that time, we were out of time. So.
I'll mention that our first district representative, Heather Scott, was one of the 9 on the committee that voted to kill that. And we have invited Representative Scott in. So far, she has declined to come in. We did get Representative Sage in last week. So we're hoping, we'd like to touch base with all the legislators.
And that's great. We all should be here.
Other bills that came up, we got probably just a few more minutes left, but actually not in a bill, but a brouhaha that we saw appear in the northern part of the state was when a Hindu prayer opened a session of the Idaho Senate for the first time, and there were some senators that boycotted it. One of them was a northern, I think a northern state Senator Cheryl Knoxall. And it seemed to raise the question, and it certainly got Idaho a bunch of national attention that, you know, was it appropriate for those senators to boycott a prayer by a Hindu versus a Christian or any other faith, actually? Were you involved in any of this? Did it come into your sphere?
Well, we open the Senate and the House every day with a prayer. And that's the first thing we do. And then we pledge allegiance to the flags and the flag. And Senator Knoxall's district includes southeastern Bonner County in Legislative District 7. There were 3 senators, Senator Knoxall, Senator Vick out of Hayden, and Senator Lori Den Hartog, that stayed off the Senate floor for the prayer, specifically for that. The Senate my experience has been over the years that we have a variety of pastors that provide the prayer from a broad spectrum of denominations. And we also have, when the pastor is ill or has another commitment, senators will fill in. And there again, we have a broad spectrum of religious denominations represented in the Senate. And our tradition has been one of tolerance and acceptance. And those that might not have been of that particular faith are respectful, and they're on the floor because that's what's expected of us. So I participated in the prayer. My faith teaches me to do unto others, and as you would have others do unto you, and to be respectful and tolerant. And so that's what I did.
When something like that comes up, it gets a bunch of headlines up here. Did it prove to be a big distraction to the Senate operations?
It's just that morning, really. For about a half hour, there was discussion. But, you know, the most part, what I saw was a warm welcome of the gentleman, people taking pictures with him, people having conversations with him. His prayer was his prayer was the same values of Christian denominations. Be nice to one another, look out for the welfare of the people, the same messages that we get from every other pastor and every other denomination every day.
Okay. It sounds like it was fodder for the press.
Yes. Three senators in particular were offended. So,
So what? Any other major legislation you'd like to bring up as signs of good progress out of our legislature?
Thanks. I would just say that for our area, there was a combination of legislation and then just constituent work that occurred that was rewarding. I was able to secure additional funding for the Lakes Commission, which is important for work on our Priest and Pendere Lakes and rivers here. We actually were able to gain some funding support through the Fish and Game budget for the Clark Fork Delta project, which was great. We were able to ward off the Department of Labor's effort out of Boise to close Bonner's Ferry office. We were able to pass the anti-bullying bill, which will provide training for teachers and administrators in our school system to recognize bullying and try to prevent it, and to intervention tools as well, which I think is critical as well. And then I worked with local folks on aquatic weed research and being able to do research projects on biocontrol in a very controlled way, but hopefully provide some tools in the toolbox, so to speak, when we're battling things like milfoil. That adds to the tools we already have, but if there was some sort of fungus or critter that would eat that thing, that particular weed, or any invasive species, aquatic weed species in particular, we ought to be able to do that research, and our current laws kind of hampered us from doing that, and so that was very rewarding as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think you mentioned earlier that the I don't know if this goes back to the Lakes Commission, but the lake levels are going to be discussed Thursday, I think.
Right, Thursday, the Army Corps of Engineers is having a town hall meeting over in Priest River. They will have another one on this side of the county later on in the year. But with the leadership of the Lakes Commission and Bill Booth for the governor and myself, and we have been able to negotiate longer level on Pendere, longer higher level. And they are going to have a meeting on Thursday at the Priest River Events Center. And I believe that starts at 5.
This Thursday, which would be tomorrow. Yes. Okay.
That's right.
Yeah.
To tell the public what their plans for operations are on Pendere and to get feedback as well. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, that's very good for people here to know. A lot of people are really invested in our lake.
And that's right.
So the level fluctuations make a big difference. So, well, Senator Keel, we're about at the end of our time. I want to thank you for coming in. It's great to speak with you. It's great to find out what's going on down there in Boise.
Well, thank you. Yeah. And thank you again for doing this bonus edition. I really appreciate it. I'm a working legislator, and so I appreciate your flexibility.
You have a day job.
I do. I have a day job, and I appreciate your flexibility and your bonus edition, that opportunity, and always appreciate the opportunity to visit with you and your listeners.
And I will mention that we will have this available as a podcast if folks don't have a chance to catch it. So if anybody's listening and they want to let a neighbor or a friend know that, hey, Senator Keel spoke on a lot of stuff happening in the legislature, go to our website, krfy.org, and look on the podcast page, and you'll be able to listen to this again. Mm-hmm. They can fact check us.
There we go. Mm-hmm.
Again, thank you so much for coming in. I'd like to make this a regular little meeting that we have at the appropriate times as things come up and when you're available. It's very helpful. We want our citizens to have the opportunity to be informed and involved.
I think that's great, and I think it's great that you guys are providing this forum. That's very good.
Okay. Well, thank you, Sean.
Yep. Thanks.
We have a few announcements, and then we're going to pretty much say have a good day. But the first announcement is that tomorrow, April 30th, you can join Jim and Jack at 8 a.m. for the Thursday edition of The Morning Show. Their guests tomorrow will be... Who are they having in tomorrow? Oh, they're going to talk about together, because they're the music men of KRFY. They'll be taking a journey through the KRFY music library and the local music shows. So if you've ever wondered how we get all these awesome, amazing songs into our library and what it all means, what is Otto's Eclectic Mix? Tune in tomorrow at 8 a.m. and find out. And next Tuesday, Chris and I will be here in the studios for the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show. Our first guest will be from the Preservation Idaho, talking about their 38th Annual Orchids and Onions Award. And then Denison Webb from Selkirk Outdoor Leadership Education will be in to talk about this organization and also the upcoming Idaho Gives Day, which is May 7th. So you can tune in then. And next Wednesday, we're going to have candidates from the upcoming Bonner School Board elections, an extra special Wednesday edition of The Morning Show.
We're going to be talking with the candidates from Zone 4. At least both candidates are invited. We have one confirmed candidate coming in, and we'll be talking about the issues that are relevant to the school district race.
That's a very important election, if I might add.
Yes. Very important. I agree. So tune in next Wednesday and hear from the candidates themselves. Let's find out what they stand for.
I'll mention the following Wednesday, we'll be covering the second race that's up for election, the Zone 1 race.
And we're going to leave you with a song by Lindsay Liu and the Flatbellies. This is called Everything Changed. And they will be performing at the Panada on May 29th for a benefit concert for KRFY, Panhandle Community Radio. So you can get your tickets now at Eichardt's Eves Leaves POAC office next to the Panada, panada.org, patchysanders.com, and right here at KRFY, you can call us at 265-2992. And tickets are now available. They're only $10, and you're supporting your very own community radio station. And this is a song, Lindsay Liu and the Flatbellies, Everything Changed. Have a great day.
Bye now.
Bye.
All at once, everything changed.